Mini episode 266 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 266. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris with you here today. And we are going to be breaking down the NFL draft that just concluded. And again, some might say, oh, don't you have to wait 2, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years to get into the winners and losers? Nonsense. It's never too soon to start insta-analyzing. Matter of fact, we were doing so during the process. Of the things that you can check out in addition to this material here today, today's show, you can check out our NFL draft preview show that we put up a couple days before the draft. Pro Football Draftology 2013 from the 21st Century Media Alliance, not least of which the FDH Lounge and FantasyDraftHelp.com, and our Insta analysis that you can find in addition to this show at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. For days 1, 2, and 3, this was a first. We had a live Insta analysis going on that we posted up there in 7 different pieces on the blog, one for each round, although it's not exactly one per round. We weren't using those as cutoffs, but you can go check those out. And today kind of puts a capper on it, going back, doing our analysis after the draft, who won, who lost in terms of players and in terms of especially teams, because that's what we're all focused on here. How did this draft change the landscape of the 2013 NFL season? It did so in some significant ways for some teams. Got a great panel here today. We're going to start with our senior editor of FDH and the man who keys our NFL draft coverage from his rankings, our chief NFL draft analyst and original FDH Lounge dignitary, Jason Jones. Jason, how are you doing today, my friend?
Well, not too bad. Trying to recuperate from 3 days of computer and TV staring.
Yeah, and you were all over this thing all the way through. Your analysis going into the draft was pretty tireless, and I know you were dealing with some things as the draft was going along. It was a pleasure to be able to do the chats with you and break this down in real time. Somebody else who was a part of these chats, and we had some very interesting moments. I am very happy to have another original FDH Lounge dignitary with us here today, and the guy who joined us for last year's NFL draft recap, Christopher Galloway. My man Chris Galloway joining us here. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh, doing fine. Looking forward to breaking this down with you guys. As mentioned, we were doing it while it was going on the blog at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, but this is a chance to sit back after it's over with, take a deep breath, see who won and who lost. Jason, I'm going to start with you on this one here. We had some real surprises right off the bat Friday night. Knew that we would. This was one of the toughest years ever to do a mock draft for. And, you and I'm happy to say we're no worse than the middle of the bell curve on this one as far as how it went, because everybody tended to do pretty stinky on this year's one. Some surprises right off the bat. The Dolphins trading up to take Deion Jordan, kind of a panic move because edge rusher wasn't even necessarily one of their primary needs. So you had that happening. You had the inexplicable drop during the first round of Sharif Floyd all the way down to Minnesota in the 20s, which none of us would have seen coming. The drop of Geno Smith, which you forecast. You thought that he could have been had as low as the 20s. He turns out to be a day 2 pick. So in terms of how it went, the wild and woolly Thursday night, what were your main takeaways?
Well, no doubt the Deion Jordan thing was probably the shocker of round one. The funny thing is I always had him going there, just didn't have him always going to Miami. So that was a big one. Sharif Floyd was almost upsetting because it seems like every analyst in the country had him as a top 5 pick. There was even a point where Oakland said they weren't going to take him. And I don't think any of us saw the writing on the wall. In fact, I was really excited. I thought maybe he'd slip a little bit, you know, 3, 5, 7 picks down the board, and somebody would get a steal. The fact that he went to Minnesota is ridiculous at 23, I believe it was. Some of the other big things, teams did what we thought they would. In some cases, some teams jumped up, some teams jumped down. I think, I don't care what Jerry Jones says, Travis Frederick in the first round is ridiculous. You could have got him at least in the back end of the second. I think there were some teams out there like the Titans and the Chargers who maybe did what they thought they had to just because it was, as people said, a fat boy draft. They had to get their big hogs up front early because they weren't going to be there later. And then there were teams that I thought did really well. Like, they may not have played the draft. They may not have got the best value for the picks that they got. But after the first day, you looked at a couple teams and thought, you know, they might be up to something here. And Minnesota was probably number one on that. And before I pass it along, I do want to mention it one more time, one more year in. I did a mock draft like midnight beforehand just because there was so much movement. And I'm happy to say that even though I only got 40% on that particular mock draft, Mel Kiper only got 15%, and Todd McShay got 12%. So still steadily pistol-whipping those boys over to ESPN.
40%? That's insane, because the ones that you and I had and the guy that we did, in all fairness, about a week out, were pretty putrid and down with it. Like I said, down with the standard average of a lot of the other draft analysts out there. Nobody covered themselves in glory this year because there were so many unpredictable things done. Chris, I know that as round one dawned the other night, some of your other duties were in control of you at the moment there, such as the demands of a public official from time to time here. So you were unfortunately not able to catch this live as it was happening, but as you were availing yourself after the fact, and then I'm guessing at some point during the first round, what were your thoughts on what was going on? One of the wildest first rounds in recent memory.
Well, it was a wild first round, and some real surprises in there. I mean, you know, the first one that jumped out at me, I was actually able to see it live when the Bills took E.J. Manuel, and I was just screaming at the TV saying, what the heck? I mean, I'm not a Bills fan, but I'm thinking, what are you doing? I like the move down to pick up some picks, but then to turn around and pick E.J. Manuel, a guy who only reads half the field, is slow in his decision-making in the first round as a quarterback, I thought is insane for a first-year coach to tie his wagon to such a raw developmental player who, at best with proper coaching, maybe in 3 or 4 years would be worthwhile if he was sitting. I thought that was a disastrous pick on the part of the Bills, and that was the first thing that jumped out at me. As you know, I was not a fan of the Mingo pick by the Browns. Again, another raw guy who didn't show me a lot last year. He's light, undersized. You know, maybe they've got a game plan there in terms of the attacking defense, but I really questioned that pick as well when there were so many other players available that would probably, you know, fit a more pressing need for the Browns. You know, just on an overall, just looking at some of the, you know, you talk about winners and losers and things of that nature. There were some great picks out there, individual picks by teams that I liked. And then there were some, you know, some overall drafts that I really liked. I mean, an individual pick, you know, the 49ers getting Tank Carradine, I thought was just a great pick where they got him. You know, that's a case of the rich getting richer. I think there was a time earlier in the season before injury that Carradine was better than his teammate who went to the Colts. I think he's going to fit beautifully what the 49ers like to do. You know, I certainly, you know, looking at Jason's grade on points, just on raw points, you know, the Jets, they racked up a lot of points. And but at the same time, I look at some of the things they did, and it's like, you know, they already have defensive tackles, and defensive line is probably the least weak part of their team. And so what do they do with their first two picks is more defensive tackles. And they've got massive holes all over the place. So, yes, they were highly, you know, they high grades on those guys. But at the same time, when you look at it in terms of their other needs, you think, what are you doing? So, you know, those were some things that just sort of jumped out at me amongst a lot of other things.
Well, and I'll tell you what you said right there, that's one of the things that really, really bothers me about the way that the NFL goes. I like the Jets' new brain trust in the front office, not to say Rex Ryan, but I like the new GM. I like the new setup there. But this whole thing, like you said, with the defensive tackle there, and they've been drafting defensive tackles high the last couple of years, this whole thing of, well, I'm not responsible for what's already on the roster. Why are fans even bothering to pay attention then? Why are fans even bothering to pay to go to games if everybody on the roster is completely disposable to the next regime? If you don't have any sense of responsibility to try to win with what you have, rather than just papering over the same spots time after time, that right there is ridiculous to me, Chris.
I think that's a great example of that is Joe Banner's comments yesterday about Josh Gordon. You know, I mean, a guy who basically played 1 year of college ball with all his issues gets drafted in the supplemental draft, which I think all three of us were a fan of doing and taking that risk because he's mm-hmm. such a potential talent. He comes in as a rookie with no, you know, no mini camps, new scheme, hadn't played football, hadn't been on a field in over a year after really only 1 year of, you know, Division I football. And, you know, was the second best rookie, you know, wide receiver, despite being saddled with a lousy head coach and a crummy offense. And then you have Banner yesterday saying, well, you know, we're certainly rooting for him to justify that second round pick. You know, way to be a people person there, Joe. You know, I'm sure he's not going to remember those comments when his rookie contract is up and he remembers that you guys, all you ever did was question him, combined with the fact that Lombardi was with the NFL Network. He trashed the pick. But anybody can see that the guy has just a complete, you know, physical ability and skills and it's just proper coaching and he could just be a monster. And, you know, the fact that you have the new brain trust, quote unquote, I love that phrase, you know, saying, well, you know, let's just see how he develops. I mean, at least publicly, you may think that privately, but at least publicly say, hey, we believe in Josh Gordon. Boy, he could be a number one for us. You know, this is an exciting young man. You know, but again, even with an exciting pick like that, they're still not willing to take any ownership over it.
Exactly.
I guess they'll take ownership over. I mean, I don't see them saying, you know, let's just see if Joe Thomas can justify his Pro Bowl picks. I mean, I think we need to wait and see. You know, I mean, that's sort of the same mentality. And I agree with you. It makes no sense.
It's ridiculous. And Jason, and looking at this here, and this might be a little bit of a stretch, but I always go for stretch analogies anyways. You being the old producer of Sunday Night Submission, it strikes me like the last couple of years at WCW, when every couple months or so they bring in new bookers and they would throw out all the storylines and be like, whatever you were watching last week doesn't count. This is what happens now. Here's who's a good guy. Here's who's a bad guy. And then by the end, nobody cared because you couldn't get invested in things here. How are fans supposed to get invested in franchises going forward when a new regime comes in and says, hey, we have no intention of looking at anybody here with clear eyes, guilty until proven innocent, and we're not even going to try to evaluate what the last regime had in place?
Yeah, well, I made a comment the other day about, I mean, these people need to get strapped down to a chair and be forced to go through some sort of a retrospective of the organization's history. And I don't mean highlight reels of players. I mean decisions made, schemes experimented with, because it seems like, especially in cities like Cleveland and Buffalo and Jacksonville even, that every new regime comes in and they think they're going to plant a flag somewhere and they're going to do it their way. And especially since we're talking about Joe Banner in Cleveland, the thing that's really starting to piss me off is stop telling me that you want good character guys and this is going to be a good character, blue-collar, team that people can be proud of, because you know what? People are proud of 6-10. I don't care how you slice it. And in my opinion, in this particular draft, that team in particular passed on a lot of talent because they may have had one or two little issues instead of looking at it legitimately and saying, we're going to get players because they think that they're going to be high and mighty about it. It's ridiculous to think that fans who have been there for decades and decades and decades are just going to go, oh, here we go again with this. Let's just be oblivious to what's already happened. And you know, this isn't Rocky V or Richard Pryor Superman here. You can't just pretend like this stuff before didn't happen.
Exactly. I'm not saying go poll the fans to see what they want you to do, but try to have some regard for looking at what's on your roster with unbiased eyes here and just saying, we didn't draft them, we didn't acquire them, so we don't care about them. It's very interesting, Jason, you mentioned about the character guys, because you anticipated perfectly where I wanted to go next. And that being, before we take a look at some of the holistic type of team grades and team assessments here, some of the noted players that slipped out of the first round, and of course, when we're talking about character, the Honey Badger would be at the top of the list, passed over by the aforementioned Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi, going to Arizona just one pick later in the third round. Other notables, Eddie Lacy, the top running back in the draft, going to Green Bay, but it looks like they're going to be putting together a little bit of a thunder and lightning type deal as they go later on in the draft for Jonathan Franklin to give a nice little contrast. So essentially everybody that's at the running back position on the Green Bay roster should be sending out their resumes and game tapes, as they should have been anyways. You have that. You have Matt Taitao going to San Diego in the second round subsequently. So as far as any of the guys that we were looking at coming into the draft, any of the scenarios there, anything really jump out at you, Jason, as far as being particularly impactful?
Well, before we get to the big ones, or at least the big ones in my opinion, Jonathan Franklin going so late to Green Bay after they were already able to secure Eddie Lacy is not fair. And I think that the NFL should institute rules about teams that are consistently good. You shouldn't be able to get certain players. It's the same thing like when the Patriots, you know, trade back and get the best player on the board. I don't think they should be allowed to do that either. Jonathan Franklin is the guy you think of when you think of what type of running back goes best with an Aaron Rodgers. He may not be as big as Eddie Lacy, but he runs between the tackles, he can bounce it outside, and he is great catching the ball in the backfield. Eddie Lacy is a thumper. Plain and simple. He's a one cut and downhill. So the fact that they got both is impressive. Why Franklin fell, I have no idea. I think most people had him going in the middle to top of the second round. Some of the other ones that you're talking about, Manti Te'o, my only complaint about that one, aside from the fact that it's in the division of the city I live in, is I wanted him to go to a 4-3 team. I wanted him to sort of play that captain of the defense kind of a situation. But he'll be happy to go there. I just hope he doesn't get lost in the shadow, so to speak. Some of the more, I guess, character-driven ones, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, that one, I'm so furious about that one. Again, that goes back to my earlier comment about you get guys that are playmakers. I don't care if Leon McFadden's a good kid. I'm sure he is. But this time next year, let's see who made more plays. And I'm not trying to imply anything about McFadden. I'm sure he's a good guy. But Mathieu is a whole other level of a playmaker. And you know that teams pass on him because it's a headache they don't want to have. And I'm sorry, but in this day and age, you're going to have guys that aren't Boy Scouts. And of course, I will say this. And I'll stop thumping the table on it. Absolute best value pick in the entire draft goes to the Buffalo Bills for signing Derek Rogers as an undrafted free agent half an hour after the draft ended. And I don't care what he did. I don't care that he got kicked off of Tennessee and played at Tennessee Tech. He is, at worst, the third best wide receiver in the draft class. and people were stupid to pass on him.
Well, and they spent a second-round pick on Robert Woods, who I had noted in our previous show a year ago was thought to be a high first-round pick in this year's draft. Just funny how things work out in that regard, but as Chris said, too bad he ain't going to have anybody to throw to him, which that's going to be a separate issue for Buffalo to address on down the road. And, yeah, I'm already planting my flag on that statement that E.J. Manuel doesn't look like he's going to work out there, particularly to justify that pick. When you're looking at some of these notable guys that went outside the first round, Chris, I hear what Jason's saying about Teau going to San Diego and that, yeah, he'd probably be better off in a 3-4. But, again, it's just one of these surface kind of impressions. But seeing him there at the Chargers podium yesterday, I'm sort of taken back to a previous Samoan linebacker that they'd had inside for a lot of years, God rest his soul. And you can't help but wonder if anybody locally there is going to be making that kind of comparison. That could be a lot to hang on a guy, to be sure. But as far as some of the notable guys outside of the first round we were talking about, what were some of your thoughts?
Well, just real quick on Teau, I think he's landed in a good situation in terms of an organization and a town. He's not in a terrible media market where they're going to eat him alive. You know, I know a lot of people thought he should go to Chicago because, you know, there's the obvious love affair in Chicago with Notre Dame. The only problem there is he'd be replacing Brian Urlacher. Mm-hmm. And so there's its own pressure cooker. So I think Rick, what your thought about him and the correlation to Junior Seau, you know, Polynesian, you know, middle linebacker, I think we all immediately had the same exact, you know, thought. I think everyone in this business did. That may not be by coincidence. I don't know. I mean, there could be a business end to that decision as well on the part of the Chargers. You don't really know. But, I mean, I think it's a good value pick, certainly where they got him. I think overall I really like what the Chargers did in their first three picks. I think they did really well for themselves. You know, other guys like the Honey Badger, I know I was also, you know, hoping the Browns would take a chance on him. But I admit that he is a high-risk, you know, type of choice where he's either going to succeed wildly or just explode or implode magnificently. You know, when he's doing interviews with like Vanity Fair and he's saying, well, or whoever it was, and he said, well, you know, well, I'm working out down in Florida, I had to have somebody take my car because, you know, in down times when I got bored, I just wanted to go down to, you know, South Beach and get high. It's like, really? I mean, you're trying to recover from the train wreck that has, you know, been your life for the last 2 years, and you're working out on the most important stage of your life, you know, try to get ready for the draft, and your thought is, man, I better give some of my car. So that's the only thing keeping me from driving down to South Beach and getting high. That's a problem. And in some ways for him, it's probably best that he ended up in Arizona with his friend and former teammate Patrick Peterson being there. That may be helpful in terms of familiar faces and structure to try to keep him on the straight and narrow, because I think I agree with Jason, amazing talent, although I'm not so sure from a cover standpoint. I think they've got it right in trying to put him into the free safety position, because I'm not convinced on some of his cover skills. He's a playmaker, but in terms of his coverage, I worry about that, especially with his height. So he may actually have ended up in a better situation, even though, you know, my Browns didn't acquire him. You know, there were a lot of guys that fell that were surprising to me, you know, into the second and third rounds. I think a lot of guys that could have gone, you know, much earlier, and for one reason or another, they just didn't. You know, we see, I'm trying to think off the top of my head here, some of the offensive linemen that fell. I mean, Keenan Allen falling down to the 76th spot before mentioned with the Chargers was a surprise. So, I mean, there's always guys that fall for one reason or another, like guys that suddenly, you know, they draft, you know, people draft way too high, like the Cowboys, one of my favorite teams, picking up, you know, the center out of Wisconsin, Travis Frederick, in the first round. I agree that was just, you know, he's a third round guy, very versatile, and he'll be helpful on that line. But, you know, picking him high like that doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, you know, every year we talk about the guys that fall for one reason or another, and we can't figure out why. You know, Matt Barkley in the fourth round, you talk about a guy who cost himself a lot of money from being a, a lock top 15 pick to going on day three and round four. You know, he cost himself a lot of money. And so, you know, I think, you know, the proof is going to be in the pudding long term on where some of these guys, how they develop and obviously getting them later, there's a lot less risk in terms of teams being able to justify the pick later. And if they don't work out, so be it. I think that was some of the Browns' strategy this year in trading out of those two rounds for future picks next year. Probably not necessarily a bad strategy for them.
Absolutely. And starting to look at the teams, just a brief aside here on a big, big steal in the seventh round. Certainly, Chris, you and I are not sleeping on what the Giants did, selecting a guard, Eric Hermann, a guy who put up 36 reps
you
on the bench.
You guys are ridiculous.
I just wanted to see if I could troll Jason on that one.
No, when I saw the comments initially, I thought, yo, hey, I'm not as familiar with Eric Hermann. I'll have to look into that. 5 minutes later, I'm sitting there going, these sons of... You baited me with your Bobcat propaganda once again.
Yeah, we did. We did. Nothing ever works better than when we're able to bait you on stuff. And by the way, I'm going to refer people. I think this is in chunk six of our chat here. Go back and check out the wonders that trolling can do. I managed to instigate a nice little debate here between Chris and Jason on Greg Little and third-year NFL wide receivers. So go check that out. It was actually me and Jason against Chris, I think, as that went along. But
That's okay. I've been a fan of the Little pick since the day we got him. And I think if you go back and you review the tapes from that draft, I said he's going to be a number two wide receiver, not a number one, and it's going to take a couple of years for him to fully get his feet in the NFL since he played very little prior to. So that remains my position on Greg Little.
Well, people are going to want to go back and check out the transcript of what we had to say this weekend. When you're looking at the team grade, one of the things that struck me, I think this is only the second year we've done this with FDH. It's only the second year I remember anyways. Of basically going through last year, Jason did a top 50 overall. This year was top 75 overall. And then it was basically 2 points per pick. In other words, the number one guy on there is going to be on the top 75 is going to be worth 150 points, then 148, et cetera, down from there. So it's based on who is getting the impact players. When I looked at this a year ago, and I'm not going to tell you that I forecast that Indy and Minnesota were going to make playoff runs because I certainly didn't, but last year, Indy grading out third on our rankings, Minnesota grading out fifth on our draft rankings. Surely that might have had at least a little bit of something to do with the run they went on last year. And, of course, you know in the case of Indianapolis that it did because of how many points they got for drafting Andrew Luck. But clearly they got other points for drafting Cody Fleener and some of the other guys on there as well. Let's just look at the first couple of tiers here on this thing here. I broke it off every 20 points or so. The top tier, we talked about this already. The Jets didn't exactly use this to fill needs, although I guess you could say they did a quarterback, but not at defensive tackle. Nevertheless, they are our winner for this year, 368 points, first place on our draft value ranking. Second, Minnesota, another great year for them, 358. But you're going to have that when you're getting Sharif Floyd in the 20s, and we had him ranked as the second best player in this year's draft. The second tier is Cincinnati at 316, Carolina 312, Philadelphia 298, and then the third tier is also three deep. St. Louis, 278, Arizona, 274, San Diego, 270. So those are the eight teams that really jump out at us. The next on there is Jacksonville down at 246. It kind of jumps down to that. Giants at 232, et cetera. So, Jason, in terms of how you look at this in terms of your draft winners and losers, what kind of correlation is there with the list I just read as far as the winners go?
I would say the list that you mentioned includes anyone that I would consider winners. The one thing that we can't really take into account, and Chris alluded to this earlier, when using this dynamic that we've established, is how teams do relative to the complete draft as opposed to hitting home runs early. For instance, Minnesota had three incredible picks. I think you have three starters by game one with Floyd, Patterson, Rhodes. I think they just went and said, you know what, we have three glaring needs. There are three guys we can get. Let's do that. After that, don't like their draft at all. I like those three. I don't like anybody else. Whereas the Arizona Cardinals, who didn't rank as high as the Vikings did, I believe may have had the best complete draft in that they literally did not pick a single player I had a problem with. And I'm not saying it just because of the Honey Badger, but Jonathan Cooper is not a sexy pick, but he's a starter day one. Kevin Minter is probably no worse than the third best inside linebacker, and they got him exactly where he's supposed to go. Honey Badger, Alex Okafor was not supposed to fall to the fourth round, but he did. Earl Watford is probably the only name I'm going to mention that you're not familiar with. Stephen Taylor, the running back from Stanford. Ryan Swope, the speedster out of Texas A&M. Andre Ellington, a guy, Rick, I know you like, another running back that got in the sixth round. That's ridiculous. And DJ Jefferson. I think that completely up and down, they did phenomenal. Other teams, the Rams, I really liked because they completely changed things up, and they got a player in there that most people don't know by name, but when they picked him, I literally almost fell out of my chair. Most people are going to point to Tavon Austin. That's great. But what they don't realize is that round three, pick 30, they were able to pull off Stedman Bailey, who had 1,600 yards and 25 touchdowns to Tavon Austin's 1,412. Bailey's a very similar kind of guy. They're both short. They're both, you know, light in the pants, even though Stedman's almost 200 pounds. So there were teams that did really, really well completely. Cincinnati upset me over and over again. I don't know what, why they're getting better, but I don't like it when Cincinnati gets better. And they had at least four picks, if not more, that I was really in love with. The Tyler Eifert thing, I think, may have surprised some people. Gio Bernard being the first running back. Marcus Hunt, my favorite player in the draft. All the way down to a guy that Ken Bex is really in love with, Rex Burkhead, going in the sixth round. So I think when we're talking about this, we have to look at it from sort of the Minnesota example, where they got a lot of punch from their first three picks in the first round, and then the bottom fell out, and then the teams like the Arizonas, the Cincinnatis, who were able to get really good quality players and value picks all throughout.
Couple of notes there on some teams that you mentioned. Cincinnati was another one of our big winners from last year, and of course they are this year as well. I'm putting two and two together here, and I think I'm adding up to four. People are wondering how they're doing it. They're one of the cheapest teams in the league, Mike Brown, in terms of hiring scouts and putting them out there. It's pretty clear. They're going for a free resource, and it's a great one. It is, of course, Pro Football Draftology 2013, because they heeded Jason's advice last year and this year, and that's how they're turning their team around. So I'm not a Bengals fan, but you're welcome, Mike Brown. As far as it goes with Minnesota, I'm sure two-time past lounge guest Teddy Atlas was perking up when he heard you coupling the names Floyd Patterson there for Minnesota, because I think we would agree they had a knockout of a draft. I think we can all agree on that. Chris, my bad pun aside here, what are some of your thoughts on the winners and losers team-wise out of this year's draft?
Well, I'll first start off with, and from a point standpoint, they were and I love the system that you have devised on ranking, but I think the Jets getting Geno Smith in the second round, and they feel like they're big winners, and in the end, I think it's going to be a disaster for them. I think Mark Sanchez will start the year, and by week six, Smith will be in there. I think Smith is going to be a colossal bust. I thought that all along. And I'm sticking with it. I was so glad the Browns passed on him when, boy, it was starting to look like they might actually pick him with the sixth pick. I think in the end the Jets are going to end up with no quarterback, you know, a year and a half from now, or be struggling trying to teach Geno Smith the pro game, not in a gimmick offense, slow on his reads and reading only half the field, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the Jets, you know, right now it looks great, but I think in the end that's a pick that it's an example that's just not going to work out at all, and they're going to be back to the drawing board on a quarterback. Drafts I love. I mean, Jason's already been there. Cardinals, Arizona, love their draft. The Rams, I thought the same thing. You know, those are two teams that have had to really step it up, I think, in the last couple of years in terms of their drafting, just to compete in that division now with the 49ers and the Seahawks. I mean, the Rams are stockpiling some good picks, and they're coming along, and, you know, they could be a really good 8-8 team that'll never make the playoffs. And it won't necessarily be because of that they're decent. It's just the division they're playing in. But I really like St. Louis's draft. And I think overall the one I like the most, and I'm shocked because I'm echoing Jason on this with Cincinnati. You know, suddenly Mike Brown has figured out how to draft. And he's drafting really well. And Bernard in that 37th pick, Eifert, someone in the middle for Dalton, Hunt. I'm also a big fan of Hunt. You're talking even in the seventh round getting the tackle out of Ohio State there, Fragel. They are creating depth and talent on that team. And, you know, as Pittsburgh slips and gets older, and if Baltimore slips at all, you know, Cincinnati, you could see a scenario where Cincinnati, with the infusion of the talent in the last couple of years, are going to be the class of that division, or very easily could be. And so I really like what they did.
Yeah, I think they've become the top team in the division this year, and I've already gone out on a limb and predicted, and this is before the draft, I predicted St. Louis to make the playoffs next year. You always have, or not always, but a lot of years, you have that sort of grid at 9-7, and it comes down to the tiebreakers. I think they're going to be 9-7. I think they're going to be in it. I think they're going to win it on a tiebreaker, because there's always somebody that comes out of it that's kind of unlikely. The problem is the way that they drafted and the kind of offseason they've had, I don't know how unlikely or under the radar you can even call them at this point, especially relative to Minnesota a year ago, Indianapolis a year ago. St. Louis looks a lot more plausible, but for the division that they're in right now. As far as it goes, Jason, on the concept of losers here with the draft, there's two different ways of looking at it. If you look just numerically, San Francisco only scored 20th at 136 points, but as the scouts said last week during our preview, this is one of the deepest drafts in years. Not a whole lot to write home about at the top, but a lot that you can get in the middle of the late rounds. So this year, that number is not going to be quite as problematic, because they were stocking up, drafting all throughout this thing and getting quality players that may or may not have registered too much on this scale. So you look at them, but you look at a team like the Browns with only two draft picks here in the first several rounds, and I understand that there are extenuating circumstances. Essentially, Josh Cooper was the second-round pick because that's what he cost them from the supplemental draft a year ago. Devon Bass, they picked him up as well, coincidentally at the same position. But again, you got teams like San Francisco that maybe graded out a little bit better than the number would tell you. You got teams like the Browns that, yeah, you could take Gordon or Bess or whoever else into account, but they're a bad team, not filling a lot of needs on the roster. That is a little bit of a controversial proposition in town, I can tell you.
Yeah, as we look at the losers, it's kind of difficult. Before we get into it, I just want to mention, as far as winners go, Jonathan Banks going to Tampa Bay, if you take the time to look up the depth chart, I can't see any team that's going to want to throw on the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they did a good draft, because I don't think they did, but I will say, if you consider the Revis addition as well as Jonathan Banks plus the guys they've gotten in the last couple years, they probably have the best secondary in football on paper. But anyway, getting back to the losers, I think Chris hit on something, even though I don't completely agree with it. I think Geno Smith can be decent. He's got the physical ability. They've got to get him consistent. They got to teach him, you know, how to read defenses and how to go through progressions and all that stuff. But all in all, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, the Jets were big winners because look who they were able to get. It's the one scenario where I look at it and go, yeah, they got some people you know by name, some guys that you watched in the college football season. But Milner addressed the need. Richardson is just feathering the defensive line nest. Geno Smith is nice and the rest of it's crap. So there's that. But then going back to your San Francisco 49er idea, you know that one pick alone tells me that they were winners. And then he's not
I know who. I know who it is.
but the Eric Reed, I thought, was a little bit of a reach. I'm not in love with him as much as everybody else is. Where everybody says he's big, he's long. I think he's the product of a really good secondary 2 years ago, less of one last year. Tank Carradine is insane for where they got him, as Chris pointed out. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, but the defensive end from Auburn, there's been some conjecture as to how exactly you pronounce his name. Quentin Patton's a guy I like. He's a complimentary wide receiver because he's not really all that fast. He's got good hands. He runs great routes. Very reliable. Nick Moody is a guy that I even like as a project because he's only 235, and he could go either to being a very big safety or an undersized linebacker. And, of course, you know, the best value pick of the entire godforsaken draft was Marcus Lattimore in the fourth round. That guy's going to sit in the wind. He's going to get rehab. He's going to get better. He's going to get to where he's ready to go, and he's chomping at the bit. He's going to learn how to read blocks and how to work this offense from Frank Gore, and the moment he does step in, it's going to be explosive, and it's going to be ridiculous. I wanted him to go to the Rams, honestly, because I felt that if the Rams could get a guy like that, you're talking about 2 years from now being, you know, really, really good. But San Francisco did a phenomenal job. But you're not going to see it in the scoring because they didn't do it up front. It wasn't, you know, the first round or two where guys like top 75 are going to be projected all that high. The Giants did well again, but it's Jerry Reese who's really all surprised about that. Kansas City I didn't like at all. I mean, you get your tackle, but, you know, you might as well have given up the rest of the draft. I thought Houston addressed some really good needs, but it wasn't a lot. So technically, I think you could look at them and say, well, they got their complimentary receiver, but after that, it wasn't all that sexy. I think the Lions are probably considered relative losers. I think the Dallas Cowboys are up there because they kind of pissed the bed a little bit. The Panthers, I'm not thrilled about. And depending on where you sit on the fence on the EJ Manuel thing, the Bills either did okay or did terribly. And lastly, I'll say, as far as losers go, this is going to upset some people. Atlanta Falcons. You know that I thought that they should have chased after Eifert. I thought Eifert puts them in a better position to be more dominant offensively going into a playoff run. Desmond Trufant. I love Desmond Trufant. I think he's a great player. I think he fits right away. I also like Robert Alford. But after that, I couldn't care less about the rest of their draft.
Okay. Chris, in our remaining about 60 seconds or so, any thoughts on the losers in the draft?
Well, I'll address the proverbial perennial losers, and that being the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
I think on face value, you look at what they did and you say, what the hell is that? Were they doing? But they had being on how many needs they had and how few picks they bothered to take. But I like the strategy. If you're thinking long-term, we all know this team is not going to the playoffs this season. Even though maybe we're all hoping for 8-8 or 9-7, they're not a championship caliber team yet with too many holes to fill. So I actually don't have a lot of beef with the idea of dropping out of a couple rounds and getting higher round picks next year in next year's draft so that they can stockpile for next year. Probably from a long-term standpoint, probably very, very smart. And as critical as I've been of this regime, it may show that they are balancing short-term with long-term development and creating a team that can compete for a long time. So, On one hand, I'm disappointed they didn't take a few players that I was really hoping they would grab that I thought could fill needs. At the same time, you know, if they're taking the long view and they're building long term, and they want difference makers, and they want them in higher rounds, you know, I think what they did was probably pretty smart.
Well, you got to like that. Hopefully that's the case. A great, great, great show today here with you guys. Thank you very much, Jason Jones, Chris Galloway, and thank you all for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 266.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.